And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
So, we prepare for the show every week, as we have for hundreds of episodes and more than a decade now. And it may not surprise you that the very first word at the top of my page of notes is frustrating.
Yeah. Look, Nick, losses are always bad. They're not as fun to talk about. But sort of on the hierarchy of things,
they're all miserable in their own unique way.
They are, but on the hierarchy of things, I don't like to talk about. Definitely losing games because of goal kicking, losing games because of umpiring, and Taylor Walker playing the victim card. None of those things I want to talk about. They all make me angry, and. They're not fun to talk about. Even when you lose, it's far more fun to talk about if a young player played well or something like that. So yeah, none of them are narratives I'm particularly fond of.
No, I knew the goal kicking gods had come for us.
Gee, it was a short honeymoon, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, although it the first four games of the season, essentially. We were kicking above average, and our opponents pretty much washed out as expected. So this was all the Crows. Oh, God, when Elliot Himmelberg, who good athlete, AFL standard player, but 200 centimetre key forward, snapped that goal from the forward pocket in the third quarter. I just thought, it's not our day.
Yeah, and things like that tech snap out of the ruck, which was, a 40-metre goal, that goes through one in 10 times, probably. Look, I think if you were being fair, even though it wasn't exactly that on the score, that, we probably got the right end of variance with the Bulldogs, and we were one up on the scoreboard.
On the emotional ledger, yeah.
Yeah, and then we lost it straight away, which was very frustrating because, we're one-eyed, but it feels like we never get that right. So, yeah, they just kicked everything. Our goal kicking was fine, but...
Completely normal. The... You mentioned about the umpiring.
According to... We were a bit under, according to the... Go on.
Yeah, and we'll talk about why, but when we're on the receiving end of such a lopsided free kick count
again,
if you're listening to the Adelaide crowd, you'd think they were being hardly done for, that they were only getting free kicks in a 3-1 ratio. And the Tex Walker thing. God. I know the Tex Walker thing is difficult to talk about, and God knows famous footballers from the 1980s perhaps least well equipped of all of people to talk about a difficult subject, but the whole thing didn't leave you with a good feeling in your mouth. And then for Tex Walker to complain about Trent Cotchin and how he would have been crucified for it, what a deeply uncomfortable and misplaced sense of who the victim in this circumstance is, who's actually suffered real harm through no fault of their own. For whatever else you can say about Tex, he'll always be one of the most well-regarded losing Adelaide Grand Final captains, so I suppose we've got that.
We do indeed, and history, he will always be the guy who let go of the cup.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to things that we're slightly better qualified to talk about, but and not as unpleasant, but certainly I don't like it, Nick. Sort of the dominant media narrative since the game has been about umpiring in general, and
yeah, my... Which,
Yeah, it's awful. So the only point about the game is that, so the broader debate about it, and I don't think the stand rule helps umpiring, frankly. I know that's only a small part of it, but that it sort of increased the focusing because it's such a... People hate the really obvious freeze, and that it just puts the umpire in the centre of attention for another issue. But that's only a small part of the broader debate, which, Phil, as an umpire, Nick, this is one thing that you're better qualified on.
It is funny. It's just not an issue at lower levels of football. Like, you just tell people where to stand, and if necessary, and otherwise most of the time they just stand there and the guy kicks it. Like, it is, it's a sign of how sophisticated AFL defensive tactics have got, that, you know, some form of countermeasure was necessary. But yeah, it's really tricky.
Yeah, but the broader net, the fact that they're not doing it lower footy yet, but they may. But that's also part of the problem, is that you shouldn't introduce rules
They do the stand rule already, but it's not an issue because at lower levels of football, people do just stand there. They don't zone off 20 metres towards the corridor when they're on the mark. Like, it's just it's a completely different mindset.
And anyway, but the broader narrative about umpires, it's sort of the AFL, and perhaps it's impossible in modern society, in an attempt to reduce the focus and abuse umpires has managed to increase it. But let's not forget the broader narrative here, that we consistently over many years have got a very raw deal from the umpires, and it almost seems like the sort of they've accepted in their head somehow in the back of the that this is okay. Like, there's no way that there can be some, like, there's nothing in the way we play anymore. We don't play in the way we did in 2017. There's no systemic reason why we should be giving away so many free kicks in these general contests. It doesn't make, it's like they've received an unconscious signal from, you know, it's silly to think there's a conspiracy. Look, there is not a conspiracy.
But there is a conspiracy.
Well, you kind of do wonder if it sort of, they all know, everyone knows in the inside why they changed the rules.
So yeah. Steve Hocking special, very much with Richmond in mind as the most effective defensive team of the moment.
Doesn't that send the signal? Like, it doesn't have to be conscious, but anyway, look, I don't, it's a terrible narrative, but the numbers do at some points speak for themselves.
Yeah. Look, I think there are occasionally discipline issues with us sort of attempting to play sort of on edge, so to speak, in a physical sense. But
They weren't really evident this week.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying that to be mean, but like, there was nothing like, if you looked at a free, we had two ducking free kicks called against us. Like, most teams probably get one every 3 weeks called against them. It's just, anyway, the 360 degree, the 360 holding the ball decisions never seem to get paid. Anyway, this is a silly conversation, I find it very boring to have.
That is one of the, as an umpire, that is actually. I asked so you have an umpiring supervisor, and I asked him, supervisor once, oh, so a guy goes through 360, is that holding the ball? And he literally did the,
Yeah, and that's the thing, and don't, as you've pointed out before, the holding the ball, how long is the holding the ball rule for? How long's the explanation in the umpire's handbook?
Oh, it's long. It's a 7-step process. I haven't gone through it recently. It's the number of steps involved is substantial, and it's tweaked every year, literally every year. So,
let's talk at football.
So we won the hit-outs and the clearances.
Yep, we won the inside 50s, we won the forward pressures, the time and forward half. There were lots of things. We won the inside 50 by 10. That was the thing about the umpire narrative, to distract from the fact that probably on a lot of metrics we won that game. And, you know, if you'd show me that's the stat sheet without the scoreline, I would have presumed that we won, and we won by 4 goals.
Yeah. Yeah. Trent Cotchin playing well. Prestia, usual shelf. Shea Bolton having 10 clearances, which is a very big number, and career high. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the we got sort of the top end of a Koch and Edwards game. You know, they're both, according to two sets of advanced metrics, they were both in the sort of top couple of players, and that's Edwards actually got some of his what he used to do more often.
It was an extremely vintage Shane Edwards game.
Yeah, and that's what he used to, like, the running towards goal, that's the kicking in straight lines, following it up, running straight at goal through the center of the ground.
Creative hands, yeah.
That's why the advanced metrics loves him. And so he was the second best player, I think, on the AFL rankings for us. And yeah, we had a lot of things go right, and unfortunately we didn't get the W.
I think Bolter backup ruckman thing, it felt like a vote in favour of it.
Except that the Noah Bolter not playing back probably cost us the game. So, you know, pick your poison.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
I didn't mean to be so negative, but yeah, you on the positive side, yes, I do agree. Look, I love him playing forward, and I completely see why they're sticking with it, but it's one of those decisions where it's almost like an NBA matchup where you've got one guy scoring 40 and the other guy scoring 38. Actually, those happen in NFL all the time too. I just the NBA playoff time, so I was distracted. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's really hard to define what's the best thing for the team and especially when you get a weird outlier game like that one where both their key backs were very difficult for us.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't great. Dylan Grimes can't come back soon enough.
And as we talk, we don't have a major update. I think it was very noticeable that we've become, like, as previously discussed, we don't have a deep midfield, and Dow did struggle. He's young, he has up and downs. He had zero touches in the first quarter. He finished with 15, so it wasn't an abject disaster. But I thought in the first we were really struggling with Dow. When Dow had a bad game, again, a product of youth, I think that really affected us.
Yeah. Look, he did work. He showed some real dash at moments, which was fun to see. He only had 4 kicks, but... Yeah, I am watching how many of those kicks are scrubber kicks and the kick away under pressure. You know, that midfielders are always going to have those. But yeah, whether or not he needs to tidy up even those kicks under pressure, I think something worth tracking. But yeah, I like the goal he set up, I think it was for Shea in the last quarter. That was pretty fun too. So you're taking the good with the bad.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely should be playing, but it's just, I think it's, we are just lacking, like I said, the midfield's just, it's thin and it doesn't take knocks well. Even in a week like this where, as discussed, the old firm was actually cracking in. Nick, Tom Lynch's game rated reasonably well.
I have no notes about Don Lynch's game. it was fine.
Pickett, unfortunately, had a bit of a crash down to earth. Didn't have nearly as good a game.
No, he didn't. That was... I wonder if Adelaide Oval, being far more narrow, is a tougher place to play wing.
Yeah, maybe... I think this is too much because football's too complex, but maybe he missed his partner in crime and Caps, but he was playing well before Caps came back. So, yeah, your theory's better. And Parker had a sort of a reversion to the mean game after playing out of his skin.
He's like his effort and his running to get to contests is something we noticeably need in our midfield. Like we need that energy, but yeah, there's also he's constantly treading a fine line of how many of his disposal being up to the standard or not. And this game wasn't quite, what I think they'd be looking for. We also had a bit of a down game from Jaden Short, although, you know, still had over 600 metres gained. But contested possessions.
Yeah, I wondered whether... I think that's the second time this year he's had zero contested possessions, but I wonder whether having Vossi back in some ways was a good thing for his output, is that we became slightly... Vossi had 21, which is around 500 metres himself. So I wondered whether...
10 intercepts as well. On our list of positives, we probably should have got to that earlier.
Yeah, like that's... I wonder whether it's almost... Walter, I agree, it wasn't such a good game, and he had zero touches in the last quarter, which is not good. But overall, as we've been discussing, we perhaps have become slightly over-reliant on Short. There are distribution through the back line, and perhaps Bossy back gives us, and his style of disposal is different. Nick, what do you think, sort of a hot talk amongst Richmond supporters, and I'm rapidly running out of things I want to talk about. I certainly don't want to point out that Jake Arts is in a very inspiring sub, but he probably came on too late to swing the game anyway. But Ross is a really hot issue of debate.
Yeah.
Where do you, amongst Richmond supporters, where are you? I must admit, I can't make up my mind myself, but where do you sit?
No, the Ross, he's very much an outside midfielder, you know. 5 contested possessions, 19 uncontested.
But a lot of people think he's a natural sentiment, which I don't necessarily agree with myself. But
no.
Yeah. Anyway, please continue. Sorry.
And he had among our midfielders, he had almost the highest disposal effectiveness, except for Sheds. I must admit, watching the game, I didn't feel... For him to be a successful outside midfielder, I did wonder if his disposal has to be even cleaner than that.
Well, the thing is, the disposal efficiency, it's a somewhat misleading stat for our game plan, because if you're banging it down the line a lot, it's very easy to get high disposal... Mm-hmm. efficiency, but it's not necessarily doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying very creative kicks or the ball movements are spectacular. Mm-hmm. That's a case for advanced metrics, because they tend to take that into account more often. So yeah, he's kicking like it's not Parker level, but it is not it's not great. Like he does miss, even though he went at 81%, 88%.
88,
it feels like that 12. In that 12, and there weren't many Shane Edwards in his prime scything disposals either. So he's just going, but also so's our whole midfield. Like there's no other option. Like we should be playing him. That he had 24 touches, and we can get very static through the midfield at times. So yeah, look, he's kind of in his prime now, so he does need to start producing.
Early prime. He's 21.
Yeah. Is he 21 still?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I thought he was 22. So that's you're right. That's not.
He seems a bit older because he's already been through a putting weight on and then trimming down phase, which normally comes a bit later.
Yeah, fair enough. So look, I can see the. But I also very much more see him the merit of playing him than I do Arts and Parker. Maybe that's a easy out, but I can see why we persist with him.
It's funny, like Jack being completely unsighted in the first half was in my notes, and then Jack sort of making something out of nothing in that brief glorious period in the third quarter, where was very much late career Jack as well, like he is. He's hard to keep down for a whole game.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to do with the forward structure, because the sort of O'Brien had a, like, we won the hit outs, but a lot of people visually watching it thought that O'Brien beat Nank in his matchup, but actually other than the goal, it's hard to find that much evidence that was the case.
No.
Yeah. Look, it's fun. It's just we haven't quite nailed the forward line matchups. What to do with the forward line in general, and maybe this comes back to the Bolter question we've already talked about. By the way, I just while you're talking, I googled Jack Ross's birthday isn't even till September, so he's not even an old 21. Yeah.
No, and you say about we needed him down back, and then yet he had a couple of marking contests in the forward line where you're like, whew, yeah, that's
totally. And his rating was perfectly good for the game.
Yeah, yeah, no, had a good game. I thought, look, he probably faded a bit, but George was definitely solid.
Yeah, solid. I don't know. I don't think our current team 12 touch it, and because he's, oh, he did have two goals, didn't he? Yep, that's fair.
Yeah, he had three shots at goal. Yeah,
so. No, that's fair. By the way, the pressure points was interesting. Not the pressure X, pressure points. So two of the leaders, or one guy came equal second, was Pickett for his 41, which is actually pretty good for good going for a wing. But the equal and Nank came at the same level. Again, good for Ruckman, but not a surprise because Nank's done this before. But guess who led it?
Oh, I don't know. Jack Graham?
Oh, annoyingly, he did. He had his number was so high that I couldn't see the 7 in front of it because everyone else was talking about it. But
he's always the default.
Yeah, and it was like 71. That's a lot, even for him. Mm. Didn't have a great game otherwise. But Bolton came second, which is okay. He's playing in the midfield a lot, but he is at least. He's at least buzzing on the defensive end.
Yeah, God, I feel like I don't have much more I can say about Bolton other than repeat my fervent interest in a 5-year contract.
Ralph is not. Yep, not. We are not experts. We shouldn't comment. But I don't think the last contract length that. Of Bolton's last contract, I still can't work out why they wanted that length of contract.
Why are you short of free agency?
Yeah, and the extra year would far more sense to make it a shorter contract. But there you go. It's definitely in the cost benefit.
Yeah.
You mentioned
about Cochin, but yeah, I really thought he was covering the ground well.
He was our top rated player on the AFL rankings. Now it's still. There was multiple Crows players who were better, but he was still. We should celebrate his good games when he has them, and that was 13 contested possessions, yeah. nine clearances.
Yeah, that's a good day at the office.
Absolutely.
Something you may have missed, but a long-standing topic of this show is sort of. Dating back to the 1990s, players who've been in emergency have always played senior football. You have to go back to the late 90s to find someone who didn't. But now we've got Sonzi and Biggie Nguyen, both have been emergencies in recent weeks. So, yeah, one to check.
Absolutely. Well, I think Biggie's the one. I think we all know Swansea's going to play senior footy, but...
Yeah. Look, speaking of the VFL, they had a good win against Carlton, particularly good as they got beaten very badly by Carlton in the last practice game of the year. Carlton were on top of the ladder. So, yeah, good. Good win. Jake Arntz backed up from being the medical sub to absolutely dominate, which probably, you know, good on him for doing so. Probably the key out of it, Kane Lambert, 25 disposals. I think, you know, be watching for the injury update pretty closely this week, because I think he'd be getting close. Sydney Stack, 23 disposals and 3 goals in a very eye-catching performance. But yeah, it was a really good effort by the VFL.
Yeah, the Stacky performance was obviously the eye-catching one of that, because when you've just lost a game because you're a bit blunt going forward, this team does need the X factor. Now, obviously the club has implied a million in very subtle ways. There's something going on with Stack that maybe not all meets the eye, but we can only comment on what meets the eye. And if
this was by far his best effort. Look, but
he's kicking goals and he's got X factor, which this team badly needs.
It does, but he hasn't quite put it together this season until this week. So yeah, this was a step up.
I'd be smashing the door down. I completely agree with your point, but I also think he's exactly what we need.
I also think Maurice Rioli Jr. Had another really good game, and he's sort of 3 out of 4 games. He's played really well, so I don't think he's far away. Riley Collie Dawkins had 25 disposals, worked really hard. It did very much catch my eye that they mentioned how Sam Banks played well, and the big ground really suited him. So yeah, I do. That thought's occurred to me of sort of how well the MCG would suit sort of a tall, athletic running player like that. So yeah, good to see.
I think the jungle drums are definitely beating on Banks as being someone who could play fairly soon. It's exciting, and apparently he's got a very deep, commanding voice, which is always a good thing in a football club.
Nick,
I hope your next words out of your mouth are going to be Soldo, because he was the dominant big man on the ground.
Had him
16 touches, 2 goals, over 40 hit-outs.
Yeah, absolutely crushed the backup ruckman for Carlton, which was very pleasing. Unfortunately, a down note from the game. He was already a bit the forgotten man, but Josh Caddy got injured, and apparently it's potentially a medium-term injury as well, so not good.
A bit the forgotten man.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was very nice of Stevie. Does Stevie Morris write the coach's report? But
often he does. Yeah.
He said that Cads was very. By the way, Stevie Morris killing it as a VFL coach.
Yeah.
But it was very. They said that he was encouraging and coaching the younger guys on the bench, which actually I respect that as a way. Like, that's a devastating injury for Cads, right? So
yeah,
it's hard to find a positive, but well, I respect them for finding one. Okay, Nick, Melbourne.
Yeah,
not great.
They're on top of the ladder with a percentage of 155.
Yep, no team I believe has scored more than 10 goals against them this year.
Yep, best defense in the AFL. They are not. Their defense is better than their attack. Their attack is good, but not as overwhelming. You know, their key position forwards are still, you know, they're adequate. But so much of the rest of the team. Ugh. I love Luke Jackson. Kaziah Pickett, come on, and yeah, the Clayton Oliver, Petrarca, Viney in midfield. They're going really well. Duh.
Yeah, they are. So this, in a stat that I think appeals to only me, but one thing I always look at when we're previewing a game is how many players they have on the in the top 100 of the AFL ratings for the season. And just for context, Richmond's got a real issue with this, that we've got Shea, who's the top 20 player, but he's a top 20 player. And you completely understand when you watch him and you understand how the ratings work. It makes complete sense. Our second best player, very unusually, this has not been the case at all for the last 5 or 6 years, is in the hundreds. Normally, if you sort of work it out, you should have four to five players in the top 100, and we have one. And that's sort of a reflection of where our midfield's at the moment. And partly also the Prestia's been injured, because you would expect him to be a top 100 player normally.
Yeah. Well,
Yes. Let's come back to Dusty. Yeah, the D's top five players are all in the top 40, if that makes sense. Yep. So, and you know, everyone knows about Petrarca. His game style loves it. Oliver's killing it. Stephen May's having a great season. And they've got two ruckmen in the top 40, which, you know, again, is completely matches the eye test. But it's stark when you see sort of unbiased, because top teams, their best players get overrated, right? It's just it's the function of narrative. But yeah, they're a really good team. And as you said before, all those top picks do lead to something. And what they've led to is, well, at least for this season, at the start of the year, pretty much looking like, is super team too strong?
Look, they're
a super team till they get beaten.
Yeah, they're certainly Richmond 2018 mode. You know, clearly the class of the competition.
So is there any hope? Other than there's always hope.
But if you cut them, they will bleed. I think it's gonna probably, we're gonna have to play well and get some luck to make it a close game, honestly. I feel like it is interesting, like GWS in a lot of key statistics were very competitive against Melbourne, except in the bit where the ball snuck through the big sticks. So yeah, I don't know, it's the Melbourne probably aren't as good as they've looked, but they're still very, very good. So we're going to have to play a lot better to challenge them.
Yes, but there is there is still hope. But that's, you know, that, sorry to repeat, and I don't doubt whether he'll play, but this is why I think we need to go for higher variance players and a couple of high variance players.
So Soldo. We've just got to bring in Soldo, that's what you're saying.
That's right.
That's all I'm hearing.
Exactly. Well said. Nick, we've got to wrap this up, unfortunately, but I just wanted to question that's sort of been going around my head, which we don't like to talk very much about on this pod because we genuinely have no inside information. It's highly speculative, but it's Dusty. And I wanted to ask you about something we do know about, which is sort of, we sort of, as much as anyone can, we keep an eye on the fan zeitgeist because we are very much fans ourselves. And look, any interpretation of what's been happening with Dusty, any good faith interpretation is that fans have been massively supportive. I would say if just based on his
being a footballing god thing.
Yeah, and which he's got a huge amount of goodwill, and you know, obviously it was pretty tragic what he's had to it. He's had an awful last 5 months, and I would say if you polled just Richmond supporters, it would be not 95% approval, and if you polled the broader footy world, it's probably well above 60. So, and that's the good faith interpretation. So any sort of, there's a lot of haters out there. Like, yes, you can always find an internet troll who says something stupid, but there's massive support for Dusty. At what point do people say, look, you know, Dusty, we really understand, but at some point, you know, it's, you know, the fact there's been no communication, that no one from me, there's no statement, there's just these silly stories in the Hun, which I do not blame them at all for doing, because it gets clicks and there's just an absence of information, and it does the club no good at all to, if Kara's report is accurate, that they're saying don't ask about it in press conferences, because I know it's annoying, but people are allowed to ask. It's a fair question. there's been at one point the lack of communication and the sort of just the mystery.
The lack of communication becomes the story. Yeah.
At what point does this get old?
Yeah. Look, I think there's a fine line, because I think very much respecting his privacy and what he's working through is completely appropriate. But also, is there a way of doing so while also providing an update? Because I think, you know, obviously there's huge interest, and, you know, the yesterday story in the Herald Sun sort of is the type of thing that fills the gap. So, yeah, you can certainly see value in having a bit more structured communication.
Fair enough.
Yep. We'd love to have him back.
We'd love to have him back. Look, if I could just we love him. We're very supportive. Completely understand. He's had a tough time. Purely rational, sort of inverted commas Moneyball fan brain. Look, the salary cap. It's a sunk cost this year anyway. So there's but. This can't go on forever. Like at the end of the year, it just like that.
Well,
there has to be a decision, which I agree.
I can't imagine he'd want to go forward indefinitely in some sort of limbo. So
it's a lot of money to leave on the table. But either way, it's probably now that we've said this, I'm hoping that we've reverse jinxed it. And as soon as the podcast drops, that he announces that he's playing on Sunday night.
Back at training on Thursday. Yeah, it'll be great. Look, what's the song that teams are using? Free from Desire. Well, I think this week we're free from expectation, so maybe we should revel in the freedom of being back in a more familiar underdog role.
Well said.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.